depicted as a walled and womb-like garden in a 15th-century French painting and showing the expulsion of Adam and Eve. Right. A golden age of primitive naturalness is pictured in a 16th-century painting by Cranach, entitled Earthly Paradise. Far right, the 16th-century Flemish artist Bruegel's Land of Cockaigne, a mythical land of sensual delights and easy living, stories of which were widely popular in medieval Europe, especially among the hard-working peasants and serfs. Left, the burial coffin of a South American Cayapas Indian. The dead man is provided with food and clothing for his life after death. Religious symbols and beliefs of every kind give meaning to men's lives. Ancient peoples grieved over death, right, an Egyptian figurine representing mourning, which was found in a tomb. Yet their beliefs made them also think of death as a positive transformation. Above, a child's drawing of a tree with the sun above it. A tree is one of the best examples of a motif that often appears in dreams and elsewhere, and that can have an incredible variety of meanings. It might symbolize evolution, physical growth, or psychological maturation. It might symbolize sacrifice or death, Christ's crucifixion on the tree. It might be a phallic symbol. It might be a great deal more. And such other common dream motifs as the cross, right, or the lingam, far right, can also have a vast array of symbolic meanings. Ancient mythological beings are now curiosities in museums, right, but the archetypes they expressed have not lost their power to affect men's minds. Perhaps the monsters of modern horror films, far right, are distorted versions of archetypes that will no longer be repressed. Repressed unconscious contents can erupt destructively in the form of negative emotions, as in World War II. Far left, Jewish prisoners in Warsaw after the 1943 uprising. Left, footwear of the dead stacked at Auschwitz. Right, Australian Aborigines who have disintegrated since they lost their religious beliefs through contact with civilization. This tribe now numbers only a few hundred. The ancient Chinese connected the moon with the goddess Kuan Yin, pictured above. Other societies have personified the moon as a divinity. And though modern spaceflight has proved that the moon is only a cratered ball of dirt, left, we have retained something of the archetypal attitude in our familiar association of the moon with love and romance. In a child's unconscious, we can see the power and universality of archetypal symbols. A 7-year-old's painting, left, a huge sun driving away black birds, demons of the night, has the flavor of a true myth. Children at play, right, spontaneously dance in as natural a form of self-expression as the ceremonial dances of primitives. Ancient folklore still exists in children's ritual beliefs. For instance, children all over Britain and elsewhere believe it is lucky to see a white horse, which is a well-known symbol of life. A Celtic goddess of creativity, Epona, shown far right, riding a horse, was often personified as a white mare. Above left, the 20th century's greatest city, New York. Below, the end of another city, Hiroshima, 1945. Though man may seem to have gained ascendance over nature, Jung always pointed out that man has not yet gained control over his own nature. Above, Rembrandt's Philosopher with an Open Book, 1633. The inward-looking old man provides an image of Jung's belief that each of us must explore his own unconscious. The unconscious must not be ignored. It is as natural, as limitless, and as powerful as the stars. End of photo captions. Part 2. Ancient Myths and Modern Man by Joseph L. Henderson. The Eternal Symbols. The ancient history of man is being meaningfully rediscovered today in the symbolic images and myths that have survived ancient man. As archaeologists dig deep into the past, it is less the events of historical time that we learn to treasure than the statues, designs, temples, and languages that tell of old beliefs. Other symbols are revealed to us by the philologists and religious historians who can translate these beliefs into intelligible modern concepts. These, in turn, are brought to life by the cultural anthropologists. They can show that the same symbolic patterns can be found in the rituals or myths of small tribal societies still existing, unchanged for centuries, on the outskirts of civilization. All such researches have done much to correct the one-sided attitude of those modern men who maintain that such symbols belong to the peoples of antiquity or to backward modern tribes and are therefore irrelevant to the complexities of modern life. In London or New York, we may dismiss the fertility rites of Neolithic man as archaic superstition. If anyone claims to have seen a vision or heard voices, he is not treated as a saint or as an oracle. It is said he is mentally disturbed. We read the myths of the ancient Greeks or the folk stories of American Indians, but we fail to see any connection between them and our attitudes to the heroes or dramatic events of today. Yet the connections are there, and the symbols that represent them have not lost their relevance for mankind. One of the main contributions of our time to the understanding and revaluing of such eternal symbols has been made by Dr. Jung's School of Analytical Psychology. It has helped to break down the arbitrary distinction between primitive man, to whom symbols seem a natural part of everyday life, and modern man, for whom symbols are apparently meaningless and irrelevant. As Dr. Jung has pointed out earlier in this book, the human mind has its own history, and the psyche retains traces left from previous stages of its development. More than this, the contents of the unconscious exert a formative influence on the psyche. Consciously, we may ignore them, but unconsciously, we respond to them and to the symbolic forms, including dreams, in which they express themselves. The individual may feel that his dreams are spontaneous and disconnected, but over a long period of time, the analyst can observe a series of dream images and note that they have a meaningful pattern. And by understanding this, his patient may eventually acquire a new attitude to life. Some of the symbols in such dreams derive from what Dr. Jung has called the collective unconscious, that is, the part of the psyche that retains and transmits the common psychological inheritance of mankind. These symbols are so ancient and unfamiliar to modern man that he cannot directly understand or assimilate them. It is here that the analyst can help. Possibly the patient must be freed from the encumbrance of symbols that have grown stale and inappropriate, or possibly he must be assisted to discover the abiding value of an old symbol that, far from being dead, is seeking to be reborn in modern form. Before the analyst can effectively explore the meaning of symbols with a patient, he must himself acquire a wider knowledge of their origins and significance. For the analogies between ancient myths and the stories that appear in the dreams of modern patients are neither trivial nor accidental. They exist because the unconscious mind of modern man preserves the symbol-making capacity that once found expression in the beliefs and rituals of the primitive. And that capacity still plays a role of vital psychic importance. In more ways than we realize, we are dependent on the messages that are carried by such symbols, and both our attitudes and our behavior are profoundly influenced by them. In wartime, for instance, one finds increased interest in the works of Homer, Shakespeare, and Tolstoy, and we read with a new understanding those passages that give war its enduring or archetypal meaning. They evoke a response from us that is much more profound than it could be from someone who has never known the intense emotional experience of war. The battles on the plains of Troy were utterly unlike the fighting at Agincourt or Borodino. Yet the great writers are able to transcend the differences of time and place and to express themes that are universal. We respond because these themes are fundamentally symbolic. A more striking example should be familiar to anyone who has grown up in a Christian society. At Christmas, we may express our inner feeling for the mythological birth of a semi-divine child, even though we may not believe in the doctrine of the virgin birth of Christ or have any kind of conscious religious faith. Unknowingly, we have fallen in with the symbolism of rebirth. This is a relic of an immensely older solstice festival, which carries the hope that the fading winter landscape of the northern hemisphere will be renewed. For all our sophistication, we find satisfaction in this symbolic festival, just as we join with our children at Easter in the pleasant ritual of Easter eggs and Easter rabbits. But do we understand what we do, or see the connection between the story of Christ's birth, death, and resurrection, and the folk symbolism of Easter? Usually we do not even care to consider such things intellectually. Yet they complement each other. Christ's crucifixion on Good Friday seems at first sight to belong to the same pattern of fertility symbolism that one finds in the rituals of such other saviors as Osiris, Tammuz, and Orpheus. They, too, were of divine or semi-divine birth. They flourished, were killed, and were reborn. They belonged, in fact, to cyclic religions in which the death and rebirth of the God-King was an eternally recurring myth. But the resurrection of Christ on Easter Sunday is much less satisfying from a ritual point of view than is the symbolism of the cyclic religions. For Christ ascends to sit at the right hand of God the Father. His resurrection occurs once and for all. It is this finality of the Christian concept of the resurrection, the Christian idea of the Last Judgment has a similar closed theme, that distinguishes Christianity from other God-King myths. It happened once, and the ritual merely commemorates it. But this sense of finality is probably one reason why early Christians, still influenced by pre-Christian traditions, felt that Christianity needed to be supplemented by some elements of an older fertility ritual. They needed the recurring promise of rebirth, and that is what is symbolized by the egg and the rabbit of Easter. Note, concerning the finality of Christ's resurrection, Christianity is an eschatological religion, meaning it has a final end in view that becomes synonymous with the Last Judgment. Other religions, in which matriarchal elements of tribal culture are preserved, for example Orphism, are cyclical, as demonstrated by Iliada in The Myth of the Eternal Return, New York, Bollingen Pantheon, 1954. End of note. I have taken two quite different examples to show how modern man continues to respond to profound psychic influences of a kind that consciously he dismisses as little more than the folk tales of superstitious and uneducated peoples. But it is necessary to go much further than this. The more closely one looks at the history of symbolism and at the role that symbols have played in the life of many different cultures, the more one understands that there is also a recreative meaning in these symbols. Some symbols relate to childhood and the transition to adolescence, others to maturity, and others again to the experience of old age when man is preparing for his inevitable death. Dr. Jung has described how the dreams of a girl of 8 contained the symbols one normally associates with old age. Her dreams presented aspects of initiation into life as belonging to the same archetypal pattern as initiation into death. This progression of symbolic ideas may take place, therefore, within the unconscious mind of modern man, just as it took place in the rituals of ancient societies. This crucial link between archaic or primitive myths and the symbols produced by the unconscious is of immense practical importance to the analyst. It enables him to identify and to interpret these symbols in a context that gives them historical perspective as well as psychological meaning. I shall now take some of the more important myths of antiquity and show how, and to what purpose, they are analogous to the symbolic material that we encounter in our dreams. End of side 3. To continue, turn the cassette over.